Animal Show with Pat Boyle.
I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to have them answered immediately.
AM 860 Travel Show with Pat Boyle.
AM 860 Travel Show with Pat Boyle.
I can enjoy London, I can go to the restaurants, I can perhaps have an extra glass of wine in Paris.
Let's go while we're young!
I'm a man of means by no means, king of the world.
AM 860 Travel Show with Pat Boyle.
We've got a full tank of gas, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
KPAM 860.
KPAM.
Here's a guy who knows wine, a travel writer who's visited over 500 wineries in the Napa Valley. I'm Pat Boyle, and this week on the KPAM 860 Travel Show, a road trip to the most famous wine country in America, the vineyards of Northern California. Also, just for something completely different, we join Canada's adventure couple on a 1,200-mile bicycle tour of Africa. We visit the coolest small towns in America and also observe an anniversary at the Montreal Hotel that John and Yoko made famous. We are about to introduce you to Canada's adventure couple. They are Dave Bouskill and Deborah Corbet. We're on the phone with them now. Deborah, who named you guys the adventure couple? How'd you get that title?
Well, we got the title here in Canada last year before we left for the Tour d'Afrique. We had been known as doing a lot of adventures around the world. And when we took on this epic race through Africa, once we started going on television and getting interviewed, people just started calling us the adventure couple.
Well, it's a fun name to have. You guys have been in 30 countries on 5 continents since 1991. How many frequent flyer miles do you have?
We've got quite a bit, actually. And it works a lot. We've used a couple of them for some free trips, went to Peru, did an adventure through there once on our miles, so loving that. That's the one perk of it all.
We're on the phone with you this morning to talk about the tour of Africa that you did last year, and we'll talk to Dave about that too. But first of all, I have a girl-to-girl question. How did you two meet? Was it on a trip?
No, we actually met in college way back in 1991, and I was 20 years old, and we didn't do a lot of adventures then, but once we moved out to the West Coast, we lived in Vancouver for a little while, and that's when the adventure really started taking a hold of our lives.
And I should tell our listeners, we are talking to a champion because you, last year in the Tour of Africa, finished first place for women, so congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah, that was a big surprise because it was a difficult challenge riding for the 12,000 kilometers.
Needless to say, 12,000 kilometer bicycle race is huge from Cairo to Cape Town. How do you train for that?
Well, that was something we trained really hard for a year. We had been avid mountain bikers before, but we had never done road cycling. So we thought we'd be ready. And we were riding up to about 400 kilometers a week. And we had done spinning classes. We were doing hot yoga to get ready for the hot weather that we thought would be, that we did encounter. And we were just riding every single day. And then once we got there, we realized that there was no way to prepare for this race. Our first day was 100 miles. I actually know that because a century ride is 160 kilometers. So our first day was 100 miles. We had to set up camp, put our tents up, cook our food, and then get back on our bikes and do it again for the next 6 days. So we found that really tough. There was just no preparation at all you could do.
That's amazing, and the race actually runs from January to May. I would think it'd be hard to be in race mentality form for 5 months.
It was really tough, and that's where a lot of people ended up dropping out of the race. We started off with over 20 racers, and then by the end, I think there were about 12 of us left because it was just really mentally hard, and it was quite the challenge to get up every day, pack up your tent, and then get on that bike and ride your heart out for 6 to 8 hours because sometimes we were in deep stands and rough roads, so even a 60-mile day could be an 8-hour day of riding just because the training's so hard.
I know Oregon and Portland especially, very bike-friendly, bike paths all over the place. Is Africa bike-friendly? I mean, did you have paved paths at your beck and call?
Oh, and you know what? In Egypt, we had really great roads, and that was a nice introduction to it. We had, for our first 2 weeks, we were on paved roads, and we were riding on the highway, but the minute we entered Sudan, everything was gone. The roads just disappeared, and I'm not joking when I say we were riding literally through the desert. We were getting stuck in the sand. We were getting lost. We were falling over. It was unbelievable. There were just non-existent roads.
Yet you kept going, Deborah. I'm amazed. What kept you going?
I'm going to have to say it was Dave that kept me going. He was right there beside me every day. We saw that I had a really good chance of winning this race because there weren't many women racers. We started out only five women altogether were racing, and only two of us did the entire race. So Dave decided to stay with me and really focus on helping me through because he was so much stronger than me, and he just kept me mentally focused every day. I definitely couldn't have finished it without him.
Well, that's great, and he actually won fifth place among men, so he's no slouch either. How about you put him on the phone now, and we'll ask him about, I guess you guys say the Sudanese are the friendliest people in Africa, so I want to hear from him why.
Yeah, when we were in Sudan, we actually ended up getting lost. This is just one example. We ended up getting lost and just sort of cycling all over the place, and when you're in a country where basically nobody speaks your language or anything like that, people were calling us over, even though they didn't speak our language or anything, offering us food, water. It was amazing. Anything that we would need, even though they couldn't tell us, you know, exactly where to go, they were sort of motioning towards where they thought we needed to go. And there was also another instance when we when we very first entered Sudan in Wadi Halfa, we met a man just we were sitting down having breakfast, and he came over and sat down with us and started talking to us. And he basically told us the whole history of Sudan and basically what had happened up in Wadi Halfa. There, where they had been, it had all been dried up there because of a dam that the Egyptians had put up. And he wouldn't let us pay for anything. You know, he bought us our breakfast, all that kind of stuff. It was really some incredible experiences there in Sudan.
Well, that sounds wonderful. At the other end of the spectrum, though, you had kids throwing rocks at you in Ethiopia. Why were they doing that?
That's true. Well, to tell you the truth, to this day, I don't know why people were throwing rocks at us, or the kids were, because it is well documented, actually, that they do throw rocks at cyclists there, and I actually know that some cyclists who cycle down throughout could avoid Ethiopia just for that instance. But it seemed to be some sort of target practice or fun, or I don't know, to them, they would they just laugh at you and throw rocks at you. It was a very surreal experience.
So what did you do? Just pedal faster?
Yeah, you just pedal faster because you really there's not much you can do about it. And there is such a densely populated country that the people are everywhere. You know, when you're cycling, it's very mountainous as well. So when you're cycling up mountains and you're only going maybe, you know, 4 miles an hour up there and you have a whole maybe 8 or 10 kids just running beside you, just asking you questions, trying to jump on your bike. And then after you pedal off, they throw a rock at you. And so I don't know why that is. And I don't think anybody knows at this point.
Boy, you skipped Kenya. I guess what, civil unrest there? Was it pretty bad at the time?
Yeah, it was. That was the tourist decision to skip Kenya. Just because of the civil unrest, it was the elections there, so we couldn't go there. But it actually opened up a great door for us to be able to go and climb Mount Kilimanjaro.
See, and that just cracked me up, because here you're on this grueling trip anyway, and then on your day off, you go climb a mountain.
Well, yeah, it's something that we sort of planned on doing at the end of our trip, but we said, hey, we're right there. Well, let's do it. It's something that we always wanted to do, and just added in. We figured we've been cycling for 2 months at this point. We're in great shape. What better time to do it?
Did you have a backpack for your goods, or how did you carry your stuff when you had to camp out?
Well, it was a fully supported race. So what would happen is all we'd have to carry with us during the day is any tools that we would need to fix our bike on the side of the road and water. The rest of the stuff was carried by three trucks. Two trucks that went ahead of us and found a campsite, and then another truck that ran as a sweep truck behind us. But they didn't set camp up for us or anything. When we got there, we had to set up our own tent, all that kind of stuff. They did cook our food for us and stuff like that, but the rest of it was left up to us.
Oh, that's an incredible story. So what's next for you two?
Well, next we're going to be heading off to Central Asia. We're going to be heading to Mongolia and riding a horse across Mongolia. That's our next challenge. As well as we're going to be in India and study to be yoga masters there because we want to, that's something else we'd also like to do. And then we'll probably be into China and cycle part of China there and do some trekking there. And we'll also trek to Everest Base Camp in Nepal.
Dave, before we let you go, could you tell us your website?
Yeah, it's theplanetd.com. And you can follow all of our future adventures there, as well as our Africa trip and all the other adventures that we've done up to this point in our life.
So that's theplanetd as in dog.com.
You got it.
Somehow I feel very out of shape and boring standing next to you two. You guys are incredible.
It keeps everything very interesting and very, you know, it's great, great for a relationship, and it's amazing to do it with your significant other. I wouldn't want to do it with anybody else.
I think you guys are a wonderful story, and thank you so much for sharing some of your time with us this morning. Canada's adventure couple, Dave Bouskill and Deborah Corbet. Thanks so much, you guys.
Thank you very much.
Show with Pat Boyle.
Next on the KPAM 860 Travel Show, Vintage California.
I've been working on this for the last almost 3 years, and my goal and mission is to visit every commercial wine producer in Napa County. I've been to nearly 550 producers. One of the requirements for the review to be posted on this website is I need to meet a representative in person, and I need to taste the wine.
KPAM 860.
KPAM.
Travel News. Centers for Disease Control says it's now safe to travel to Mexico with the number of swine flu cases easing.
We do think it's fine for most people to travel to Mexico at this point.
Interim CDC head Ann Schuchat. Good news for the airline industry. Passenger satisfaction has jumped more than 3% in the latest sampling.
Airlines are doing a better job of taking care of their passengers. At least that's what a University of Michigan study found. Passenger satisfaction was up 3.2%. Study author, Klaus Fornell.
It has to do with a reduction in passenger load, which in turn leads to more seat availability, shorter line, and more on-time arrival, both for passengers and for luggage.
Southwest Airlines got the highest marks, with Continental, Delta, American, and U.S. Airways rounding up the top five. Jim Shenavy, CBS News.
Travelers face a new set of challenges these days when they're flying. CBS's Sharon Middleman says, if something is stolen from your luggage, you could get caught between the people who fly you and those who search your bag.
What could be almost as bad as someone stealing valuables from your checked luggage? Well, it's going through all sorts of mumbo-jumbo to file a claim.
The issue really is, who pays for what? Is it going to be the airlines that are going to cover the losses out of your bags, or TSA?
Kate Hannah runs a website called FlyersRights.com. She says the double paperwork isn't the only pain in the neck.
The airlines require that you present them receipts, and then they depreciate whatever's lost.
Sharon Middleman, CBS News.
United Airlines will increase its fee by $5 for bags checked at the Portland airport. Policy takes effect June 10th and does not apply to luggage checked in and paid for online. More travel news later on in the hour on the KPAM 860 Travel.